Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
COVID spikes, causing more lockdowns and rollbacks. But vaccine hopes help to keep a floor under the markets. Everything's coming up electric, and it's that time again. We need to start thinking about year-end moves, all this, and much more on episode number 689 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, hey there. Welcome aboard. And thanks for listening. And for most of all, thank yourself for working your way to becoming a disciplined investor. You're doing a great job. Keep it up. This is your path. This is your decision about your future. So keep learning, working. And I got to tell you something. If you do it right, there's a pot of gold at the end of the road, right? Take some work, take some effort, take some time. It's not all about just easy come, you know, and easy go. It's a process that's involved in all of this. And I want to make sure that you continue doing it. Don't let up on it. You'll be so happy when that day finally comes. You're like, hey, you know, I can retire. I can actually get where I want to be. I can utilize the money that I saved, that I earned, that I invested wisely so that I don't have to work. I can do what I want. I don't have to worry about the rent, the mortgage, this payment, that payment. I can actually get there and use the money that I've accumulated to do what I want to do for the rest of my life without that worry, without that, you know, that fear, that overhanging kind of concern, that monkey on your back that is like, well, can I do this? How am I going to do that? You know, it takes a lot of work, takes time. It's like a good recipe, you know? It's like it needs to be really done well and the time needs to be put in to get that great result. The same thing here, same thing here. I'm Andrew Horowitz. I am the founder of Horowitz & Company. Of course, the host of this, the Disciplined Investor Podcast, doing this for the last 13, 14 years now. Let's think about that, 14 years. Going on about 14 years. And been doing this work that we do at Horowitz & Company since the mid-1980s, actually. So a lot of history, a lot of changes over time. I want to mention, of course, on Tuesdays, I also co-host a show with John C. Dvorak. That's DH Unplugged, dhunplugged.com. Just go there, you'll find out. Follow me on Twitter, you'll find out all about when all these things happen. The live show on Tuesday nights at 9. Andrew Horowitz, one word, Twitter, just kind of put that in there and follow me and you'll get right on it. So what is going on? I guess we got to start, unfortunately, with the problem at hand, right? We got to discuss this. I know we're tired of it. I know it's overwhelming and we hear it all the time. We're fed up. I'm fed up. You're fed up. We've had enough. But unfortunately, we're still prisoners to this whole thing. In some way or another, we got to deal with it. And that's obviously the pandemic, the COVID-19, the coronavirus, whatever you want to call it. Because there's a lot of problems brewing. And over the last couple of weeks, these problems are just not going away. It's not like we just dismiss it and say, well, you know what? It's a little bit of an uptick in here and this is going on. Because it's not only about the cases. And depending on how you want to look at the PCR test or the antigen test, or you want to say, well, it's not accurate. It doesn't matter. The fact of the matter is that the governments and the health organizations are really getting down and dirty with this and believing everything and saying that we have to do this or that, or we're going to roll back, we're going to lock down. I mean, there are spikes around the world, right? We are seeing that there is, I don't know, what was the number? Like 250 200,000, 250,000 of new cases in the U.S., but around the world, hitting daily levels. I mean, we saw that Justin Trudeau from Canada was on, begging people to please be careful because they see a massive spike going to happen over the next couple of months. Hospitalizations are up. And unfortunately, in all of this, the U.S. is the worst of it. We are the epicenter of all this. What started out back, hey, you know what, this thing is going to be over by Easter, has turned into a never-ending saga where we just cannot get rid of it. And what's interesting about that is, again, this is all about what you want to believe, what you choose to believe. But what's really interesting is that Asia, a lot of Asia is kind of back to normal. It's like nothing's even happening there. I don't know if it was the contact tracing they put in, the overwhelming lockdowns initially, the general, the agreement by the people, or lack of rebellion maybe is a better way to look at it, over the masks and the, you know, all that was going on. I don't know if it's that or the data is just completely squirrely. It doesn't matter. Because there, things look a lot better from every aspect and every piece of news that we are seeing. And here, whether it's just the news, whether it's the official data, whether it is the politicians, whether it is the individuals, I know here, I'm hearing more and more and more cases of people that didn't have it before, thought, hey, you know what, we're through this. We didn't get it. Here's the problem, is that we're the hotspot. And we're starting to hear more about rollbacks, lockdowns, stay-at-home orders. Not even orders, but stay-at-home requests. That's the new thing, right? You know what? Hey, we're not going to order a stay-at-home, but please stay home. That's what we're finding. And here's the interesting question to all this. The thing we really need to think about is, well, how are the markets going to react to this? And in particular, how are the markets going to react to this in the absence of stimulus? That's the big thing that's on my mind right now because we can't get anything done right now because we are in a position that we're not quite sure what the outcome of the presidential election is and how that's going to happen. If Biden comes in, right now he's hamstrung. His entire administration is not getting the information that they need in order to make things happen for a smooth and efficient transition. They still have some time, but it looks like it's going to come down to the wire. And the stimulus problem is multifold. I mean, you have multifaceted issue with regard to what's going to happen here because we are seeing that from the Republican side, they're talking about $500 billion of stimulus. And I got to tell you, if rollbacks and closures happen and people are just not going out at all, I'm not quite sure what the stimulus that we're going to put in is really going to accomplish right now unless we start doing what some people have talked about, which is fund every business, fund every person, fund every debt that's out there. And other than that, if we don't have a massive plan, $3, $4 trillion, and this thing continues and it starts to really affect people not wanting to go out until such time as that there is an effective, efficient, and a safe vaccine. But how long is that going to take? I mean, we're talking about possibly into March now where we're going to have enough vaccines potentially for about 10 to 15, maybe 20% of the population. And you say, well, about 20% of the population has probably gotten it already, so they may have the antibodies, so they're probably good. So another 20%, we're starting to get towards herd immunity. But then, of course, we have the issue about, okay, I'm not taking that vaccine. It happened too fast. It didn't go through the proper protocols. And safety is kind of a question. I don't know what's going to happen 5 years from now. If I take that vaccine, what's going to be the impact of this on my life and on my body sometime in the future? So we have all that going on. The problem remains, though, the major issues that we saw in the economy, not just kind of a blanket of issues, but really focused in on areas of leisure and hospitality, travel, restaurants, They're in the target zone once again. And a lot of these companies, maybe not the airlines, maybe not the cruise lines, have seen a really nice recovery, especially retail, which is back to all-time high levels. And that was really based on the fact that a lot of people either got back to work or had a lot of money jingling around their pockets due to the fact that there was incredible amounts of stimulus that was given to them. But if we don't have a massive stimulus and we have more targeted, which I'm in favor of, by the way, I'm in favor of after all the stimulus that we saw and the backstopping that happened. And by the way, we saw on Thursday night into Friday that Treasury Secretary Mnuchin is asking for about, I think it's $450 billion back from the Fed that they were using for a corporate and municipal bond backstop that they would use and leverage that up. So that's something we got to look at. We'll get to that. I think that's something that we need to really talk about. But it's an issue right there with regard to, I'm not exactly clear why he's doing this. Now, the only speculation I have on this and why he may want to take back that money, because the programs did end at the end of the year. So it's kind of, that's what the law probably wrote down and that's what it was. But he could have probably left it at the Fed for some time if there was potentially another emergency or a credit crisis. But I think possibly what's going on right now is he's going to be utilizing that money, taking it back, if you will, possibly to fund executive orders in the area of maybe employment. You remember what happened recently that Donald Trump, President Trump, he signed an executive order to extend the unemployment benefits, $300 plus $100 from the states. Remember that whole thing? Well, there was money that was available to do so. So maybe what's happening here, it's actually a good thing. Good thing for the employment circumstance, but not so good for the people that are considering that need to prop up corporates and munis, is that this money will be taken back and it'll be available in the Treasury, therefore available potentially for use in an executive order to extend unemployment benefits, because that all ends at the end of the year. And if we can't get Congress, because we won't, to do anything by then, we're talking about 6 weeks plus vacations in between. Really, what we're talking about at this point, after the Thanksgiving holiday, by the way, happy Thanksgiving. Hopefully you're doing well. I'm going to be making a spatchcock turkey. Probably talk about that another time. I'll probably talk about that on DH Unplugged this week. A spatchcock smoked turkey. Anyway, they go away. Congress is gone on a little bit of a mini vacation, and then they come back. I mean, we're talking about, what, 3 weeks until Christmas, and then that's it. So by the end of the year, and even if they do vote on it, how long does it take to roll out? We're talking about mid-January. So another period of time that people are not going to be getting money, and you add that to the incredible spike in cases, concern about people going out, traveling, doing, and even the government saying, hey, do me a favor, please do not travel if you don't have to over the Thanksgiving holiday, which is one of the busiest times of the year. We know about that. We always know, hey, I'm not going to an airport on Thanksgiving. So right now we have a bit of a slowdown possibly happening. The good news is that, yeah, listen, there is the potential for, or there is the reality actually, not even a potential, the reality that the Fed is going to continue to keep rates low for a very long time. We know that. But markets are looking for more stimulus. This expectation is real and is probably going to be another plan. I don't think it's going to be the $2.2 trillion, the original value. I don't even think it's going to be $1.5 trillion. Probably in the neighborhood of $500 to $750 billion targeted the best way they can, plus possibly using some funds that they are clawing back from the Fed to fund the employment situation. So the good news in all this, well, actually, there's not much good news in any of that. But there is some good news. We saw that several companies are closer to an effective vaccine with what? Anywhere from 90 to 95% efficacy and supposedly very safe. And they're going to be applying for EUA, emergency use authorization. And that should happen, I think, for Pfizer this past week. And we have AstraZeneca and we have Moderna. And that's just the ones that are currently showing really good promise. That is probably going to at least provide some kind of hope for the markets. It will kind of give us a time. But you know what's interesting? I thought this was kind of interesting. We saw this pop and drop on the vaccine news, right? That giant pop that we saw two Mondays ago, 1,700 points or so in the Dow initially, came back down a bit, but still was up really nicely for the week. And then we saw that following Monday, last Monday, the Moderna news and markets popped initially, but then came back. And the stocks, I mean, you look at Gilead, that stock, which has the treatment, the remdesivir, I can never say that word. I'm never going to be able to say it. It's just one of those things. So that stock is cutting under 2017 levels. I'm not sure these stocks are a really good buy necessarily because government's going to want to give these out for free and then they're going to fight for low pricing on this. It doesn't seem to be like one of these other names, one of these other treatments that they have out there for some other drug that they could charge extraordinary amounts of money. So there is good news. It's tempered with reality about the ability for production, the ability for logistical problems that come with the distribution of it. And then, of course, you know, the question of who's going to take it. But still, there is something. This is much better than we were 3, 4, 5 months ago. So markets like that. But I do think that this whole issue of stimulus right now is something that they really are looking for, because if we have this time period between now and the spikes that are projected to be, and the cases and the deaths and the hospitalizations, and then the impact of what that does to the psyche of the consumer, which has been very strong. No question. The consumers are like, I'm buying stuff. I mean, I find myself, you know, you can't go out, you can't do much, a little travel here, a little, you know, drive there, but in a little restaurant here and there. But, you know, I feel like, you know, I'm going to buy something for myself, make me feel good. Probably have the same situation. That's okay. Consumers are definitely strong. You know, they always say, don't bet against the American consumer. I'm not doing that, not betting against them. So we have the potential for this vaccine. On top of that, I think this time around, even though the cases are much worse than they were ever, I mean, the death rate is better, if that can be seen as good. I mean, it's still deaths, which no deaths are good, but the death per 1,000 cases and all that is down statistically, which is kind of a crazy discussion, but okay. So the potential for mass shutdowns are probably not going to be as easily done. So if that's the baseline assumption, then markets are somewhat prepared for that. It's only if it gets a lot worse that it becomes really a problem. But right now, it does seem that markets are like, okay, we think there are going to be some spotty shutdowns, lockdowns, school closings, all of that, restaurants, maybe some curfews here and there. But, you know, I don't think there's going to be a massive national lockdown. But even though that's the case, due to the fact statistically that we saw such a great GDP print last quarter after the horrific, you know, we had the historical drop in GDP. Then we saw the historical increase in GDP. We're starting to get murmurs already that, you know what, things have slowed down. People are kind of, you know, they were locked in, they were let out, and now they're like assessing. And without the excess stimulus, obviously we could say that with all the people that are unemployed right now and all the businesses that are struggling, that it makes sense that either fourth quarter or the first quarter, we're going to see a significant drop in GDP. Now, there's a recent report this week that JP Morgan is forecasting negative GDP in the first quarter. They said the first Wall Street, it was the first Wall Street bank to forecast this. They said they expect the economy to bounce back in the second or third quarter. So again, a very bumpy recovery, which is what we expect. And probably we would say that over the next couple of quarters, we'd expect that we'll see more of the same, of this very jerky recovery, depending on what sector it is, what area it is. I mean, obviously we have things like we talked about the leisure companies, and obviously they've been extending out, unfortunately, the cruise dates. I think that there's a couple came out last week that said they're not cruising through March. Some said they're pulling their ships through the entire calendar year of 2021. And, of course, with the airlines and all hotels and restaurants. I would expect that we would see that more companies would actually start to update their guidance into 2021, especially at these elevated earnings expectations that analysts had put on for 2021. Remember, nobody knew what was happening throughout 2020 as many companies pulled their guidance. And what happened was that analysts were pretty much just shooting in the dark. And what they did was they shot low. And then companies were able to beat, and it was like, wow, how great is this? So much better than expectations, and therefore stocks rallied and ramped up higher. And again, many companies in many areas did very well that really were the beneficiary of some of this unfortunate situation. You know, when you look at the Zoom, the Pelotons, you know the names, right? Microsoft and Facebook, and you could go on and on with the list of the names that really benefited, Wayfair for that matter. And there was those that suffered dramatically, like the banks that were just hit hard due to the very flat yield curve, which recently started to change. Energy companies that were just obliterated due to the fact that the usage of oil and energy was down significantly. And the movie theaters and the restaurant companies. And you know the list. So I think that if we are going to see more of the same that we're seeing right now, that there is a need to start guiding down a bit. And maybe there is a little bit of excess in the markets right now. I think that you are seeing that there is this real problem with expectations and reality going into 2021, because the expectations initially were all about it's over in 2021. We are back to normal. And we are far from normal. Even if we get a vaccine tomorrow, it's going to take a lot of time to get in the system and be utilized and create this environment of, okay, we're done. If you've ever been in a car accident or you've ever had something happen to you, you know that those thoughts kind of reverberate around for a while. It takes a while to get out of your mind. Every time you get behind the wheel, you're like looking around a little bit more. I remember one time, this is a crazy story, but I'll tell you something. There was this one time I was going down to Miami. I think it was a Christmas Eve, New Year's Eve, Christmas Eve. I think it was Christmas Eve. I was going down to Miami. I went to a house. I opened my door, and then I opened the door at somebody's house, actually. I opened my car door in the driveway at their house, and the next thing I know, I'm about to get out, and I feel a cold metal object on my temple. And I look up, and I see there's a gun pressing against my head. And this guy says, give me your money. And I said, okay, I'm going. I'm not moving. I reached back to my wallet. I couldn't get my wallet out. He's like, he gets getting agitated. And I'm like freaking out. I finally get my wallet out. I give him the wallet. And he tries to take my necklace that I was wearing at the time that was given to me by a relative. And he couldn't get that. He was in a rush and he just left. And then he leans over to me and he says, do you have any guns in the car? I said, no. He says, give me your keys. I'm like, oh. So I had to give him my keys. And they sped off, obviously leaving me in my car with no way to chase them, which I wasn't going to do. But that left a major impact on me for about a couple of years. Every time I entered in kind of a parking lot or, you know, a late night situation, I would look around like crazy. It was in my head. Maybe it was illogical, but you know what? It woke me up and created kind of a sense of anxiety every time I was alone in the nighttime, especially in a parking lot. Man, it was like, this is a kind of like post-traumatic stress disorder that you get in these kind of situations. Point is, it's going to take a while for a lot of this to rush through the system and to get washed out, where everybody feels comfortable about going up, shaking hands, hugging, kissing, going out to dinner, sharing food, sharing forks, sharing drinks, and just traveling and doing what it was that we did before that we took for granted. Man, did we take that for granted, didn't we? So with that, I just wonder how, without the stimulus, that we're going to have such an incredible amount of increase in earnings for companies across the board, like they are being expected. And I do believe analysts are going to start coming down on some of those, and that will temper some of this upward move in the markets until such time that, and of course, because of GDP and the slowdown in the economy, doesn't mean it's going to crash or anything like that, but just be aware of what's going on because it's important to have yourself at the ready. But that's like, but all that's looking at one side of the discussion, isn't it? We have to make some room for the fact that even as the trend on this is looking really, really bad right now, there's no question about that. Again, we may have this vaccine in 2021. Yes, there are a lot of issues with it like we talked about, but there's good news. So if in fact, let's take the other side of the discussion here that I think you need to put in part of your thought process when thinking about where you want to invest, where you want to be, how much do you want to be invested in, and why it's not all bad. Because there will be a day, and again, maybe markets are a little ahead of themselves and investors are a little bit giddy with all that's going on, with all the flush amount of money in the system. And just look what Bitcoin is doing. Just look at the excess speculation in SPACs. And we're going to talk about EVs in a moment. There is a time when things will get back to normal. I really do believe that. Now, many of you may be saying, I don't know how that's even possible. I do believe that. I mean, if nothing else, everybody in the world is going to get it and then kind of hopefully has antibodies and immunization at least for a period of time. But when that happens, you have to realize that when people go back to work, and some jobs will never get put back on, it's just the way it is. I get that. When we get people back to work a lot more than we have right now, and considering the amount of stimulus that's in the system that has been pushed in, and that is going to continue to be pushed in for years to come with low interest rates by the Fed, you have to believe, you really do have to believe that there is the potential for things to get a lot better and heat up. And I think that's the anticipation and expectation of what we have from a lot right now of investors that are thinking it's going to happen like right around the corner, tomorrow, done. And I think that there is a healthy dose of that reality out in the future because we are going to get another stimulus plan, by the way. And I think there's going to be an infrastructure plan. I think the Democrats are going to push really hard. And the president, if it is Biden, is going to push really hard for some kind of quote-unquote Green Deal. And that in itself is going to be a stimulative measure for the economy. On top of the probability of another $500 billion being flushed into targeted areas that may need it and an extension of the unemployment benefits. And there's even talk about funding businesses further with further PPP or grants. That's something that's been discussed for a while now. And I do believe probably that's going to happen. And it's not only here in the U.S., it's around the world. And remember that every time you think of it, that even though some of the areas around the world are doing a bit better, they're still pumping stimulus into those markets as well. So their recovery is looking a lot better. So keep that all in mind. I mean, I do think that the economy eventually could go into an overdrive, overinflated, like a mechanism. And these ultra low rates are going to be a part of that. I mean, we do know they're already talking about overshooting. I mean, the Fed has said it. Not only have they hinted, but they have said it. We are willing to accept a higher level of inflation to make sure that we can meet our objectives. I mean, they say whatever they want. I remember back, what year was it? 2010, 2011, 12? You know, they said, hey, you know, when we get to like a 6% unemployment rate, we're done with all the stimulus programs. We get to 6%, you know, they're like, hey, you know what? We think we need to get to 5. Then 4.5. Then 4. And they kept on keeping these ultra low rates pretty much on forever. They tried to increase it a couple of times. That ended up terrible. Markets got pissed. We had the taper tantrums. Remember those? And what's happening is that we are here for low rates for an extended period of time here and globally. So keep watching your portfolio allocations into the end of the year, into the start of 2021. I gave you some areas that we were really focusing on. In the last episode, episode 688, I talked about the areas that we're looking at, and 687 as well. We talked about, so the last couple of weeks, we talked about how to set yourself up for an inflation-related portfolio, some ideas that you could utilize, some areas to invest in, possibly some things that could pop back, just something to take a look at. So, you know, into the year end, you want to make sure that you are set up or well-positioned. And, you know, it reminds me, we have a year-end special offer going on right now. You know, I've told you about our robo-esque portfolio management system where you can invest as little as $10,000 and get involved now. And through the end of the year, you get, for anybody who signs up as a new account or an existing client, adds $10,000, you get a copy of my book, The Disciplined Investor, Essential Strategies for Success. I'll sign it. Easy process. Easy. And this investology that we created was because a lot of listeners had asked us, hey, you know what? Listen, we'd like to be in your global allocation portfolio. It's $500,000 minimum. Is there something that you could do so that we can kind of start out at a lower entry point? So what we did was created this. And this is a globally allocated strategy, right? We work together on this. It's advisor crafted, as we call it, technology enhanced. So through the end of the year, get a copy of my book signed, personally signed to you. The discipline, get a picture with, with the cover. You know, eventually we'll do a reprint and you're not going to get this cover. So this is going to become a collector's item, I would think. With we only have like 100 books left out of the thousands and thousands that were printed. But I saw a box the other day and I'm like, hey, you know what? Let's do something with that. It has my picture with my mustache, my 80s style mustache, which everybody makes fun of. But at the time, it was it was what I looked like. You know, it was what it was. So there's a story that goes with that about scuba diving, by the way, of when I shaved it off and I was told never to put it back on. But it was too late. I already took the picture and did the whole photo shoot for the cover. And the mustache is on there. So you get a copy of The Mustache Disciplined Investor, Essential Strategies for Success. Go to Envestology. That's with an E, E-N, E-N-V-E-S-T-O-L-G-Y.com, Envestology.com. Check it out. There's a little button on the top that says something to the effect of, hey, get started crafting my portfolio. And you get a free login, free registration. What's really cool is you kind of go through this very intuitive question and answer process to really identify your time horizon, your risk tolerance, and then what happens is, voila, it's like magic. A portfolio is created for you on the fly. And you can see exactly what it looks like. And you can say, you know what? I like this portfolio. I see where I lie on the risk spectrum. You know, I want to increase my risk. I want to decrease my risk. You can play all around with it. And then everything is electronically done once you're ready to start and open an account. So go to Envestology.com and check it out. Start crafting your portfolio. I think especially, you know, if you're trying to get started in this whole thing, this is the way to do it. Now, on the subject, I could talk about the end of the year. That offer is only good through the end of the year. Anybody that opens an account from now to the end of 2020. So, on the subject of the end of the year, I have this as a note that I want to talk about because it's that time where we need to start looking at something called tax loss harvesting. Now, you may say, Andrew, such a great year. I don't have any tax losses. Well, okay. Maybe, maybe not. It's really not that difficult of a process, but it's a good practice for you, especially if you had built up gains that you have in your portfolio or losses that you have that you can carry forward from previous years. It's a way to kind of prune your portfolio and make those subtle changes this time of year to help you rebalance and also to make your tax efficiency that much better. So, for example, one of the things you could do is look at your tax returns from last year and see if there's any carry forward tax losses, any capital gains carry forward losses that you can utilize. Now, you usually have about $3,000 if, in fact, you have these. You may not. You may have all been brilliant and done the right thing all along and only have gains. But if you have carry forward losses, what you want to look for is areas in your portfolio that you may have gains that you could sell before the end of the year and offset. So you look at your portfolio, see we have these built-up gains or losses. Maybe you want to say, you know what? It's time, end of the year. Let me cross-sell. Let me sell some of my gains, sell some of my losses, cross them, because that's how I want to, it's not only for taxes. It's also for portfolio management. Now, for those of you that have mutual funds, this is really important time of year to start really paying attention, because you're going to start to see some estimates come to your email about, hey, you own the ABC Mutual Fund, and we're estimating that there's going to be a long-term capital gain flow through into the end of the year in the amount of 35 cents per share, and there'll be a short-term capital gain of $1.22 per share. And you may look at that and say, okay, that's great. Ah, great, I'm making money. However, that's good and bad, because those capital gains that are coming through really are not something other than a taxable transaction. This is why we use ETFs a lot inside of our portfolios, along with certain mutual funds that may or may not be tax efficient, but, you know, get the job done for what we're looking for. But those of you that are, have a mutual fund that is not an IRA, because it doesn't matter inside an IRA, but if you have a mutual fund, you need to start paying attention this time of year to what it is that they are going to be looking at from a capital gains flow through, and then see with that, again, if there are any losses that you could take in your portfolio to offset so you do not have to pay the taxes. So it's a time right now to realize whatever's in your portfolio and whatever the tax implications are on the sale, and to affect that transaction between now and the end of the year. Now, some of this you may not know towards to much later, maybe the 15th of December. But you'll start to get these notices, and pay attention. Don't just throw them out. Now, if you don't get notices and you have a lot of mutual funds in your portfolio that's not inside an IRA or pension plan or a 401k plan, what you want to do is start maybe making calls or at least going to the websites of the various mutual funds. ETFs are different. You don't have to really worry about ETFs with this. However, if you have losses in an ETF and it's long or short term, you may be able to utilize them to offset some of the taxes that are coming through from your mutual funds or from some of the other realized gains. Let's take a second here to mention something. You probably know this, but I'm going to mention it anyway. There is a big difference between realized gains and unrealized gains. Realized gains are something that was sold and provided you either a gain, which is either taxable, or a loss, which is not taxable, which could be used to offset. So if you bought something and sold something throughout the year and there was a gain or a loss, that's realized in this current year. Now, if you bought something and you didn't sell it and there's a gain or a loss, we call that unrealized, because you didn't actually complete the transaction. You're still holding it and you don't have to worry about that right now in terms of any taxable consequence. However, again, if it's a mutual fund, there may be a pass-through of some of that into this year. So it's really a good idea this time of year to take a moment and look at what you may be expecting and how to offset it before the end of 2020, because you don't get any more time. And once the clock strikes midnight on 2020, and here you are into January 1st, yep, all bets are off. You can't sell anything and do anything. So make sure to do that. Take a look at that. Write that down. Put on a sticky note somewhere that you want to start thinking about, looking at where the capital gains flow-throughs are going to be from your various investments. What was your capital gains this year? What were your capital losses so far? And what kind of carry-forwards may I have from past years that are available on my tax returns? So, again, you can only kind of utilize some of that, $3,000 per year to offset if you don't have anything. So, okay, next on my list, markets. Ah, yep, well, talk about markets. We do that a lot, don't we? All right, let's talk about markets for a second here. One of the things I find really interesting right now is that I don't think anybody's really paying attention to a few specific items right now when it comes to investing. Actually, it's not right now. It's the past several months. And the two things that are really not so much a head scratcher, but curious is the lack of paying any attention to economics and valuations. It just doesn't seem to matter right now to some people. But I can understand that. It doesn't mean I have to like it or not like it. This is where we are in this market cycle. We know without going into this whole thing again, I'm not going to go through all of this. We've done this before that, you know, the fiscal stimulus was a major shot in the arm for the economy. And we know that the election, of course, and the outcome, at least that we're seeing right now, where we have, and it's not completed yet, but, you know, where we have Joe Biden as president and we have a split Congress, is not going to yield, you know, this blue wave concern that there was out there. Therefore, not much is going to get done, right? We know there's going to be a lot of blockades happening in the way of changing the tax code, which was one of the biggest issues and concerns by markets. So that's good. There's kind of a collective sigh of relief that we have. And we're also seeing that the results that are taken from where we are in the election right now, taken to mean that some of the initiatives like plans for, you know, a heavy green initiative and massive renewable energy, while still on the table, may have a little hard time getting through. But I think it's going to be a major focus. And I think they're going to press it. I think this idea of, you know, save the world and climate change and new Green Deal, already talking this weekend about going back into the Paris Climate Accord. This is a major, major issue for the Democrats. It's a major issue for a lot of people. Let's not just split it by party. And I think that some of the things that were taken down and some which were costing us a lot of money in the U.S., but yet not getting a yield out of it. But I do believe that, you know, the idea of if we can, in fact, work towards a renewable energy source, why the heck not? What's the harm? If we know that the energy that we're using currently, fossil fuels in particular, are creating problems. And whether when you're not, you're a believer in climate change or not, that's not the point. But we know that, you know, burning these fossil fuels is probably not the best thing in the world. Unless you're an energy provider, of course. So why not work on the renewable energy side? And maybe that's what we're seeing this incredible amount of interest really spark up, no pun intended there, but spark in the area of EVs and electric anything. Clean energy companies are popping up big time. Some of them are not earning money. Some of them will never earn money. Some of them will go bust. But once again, we're seeing a significant move towards everything electric. Electric chargers, solars, wind, wave tech. These stocks have been moving dramatically. And I think it's something we need to consider because even though there's this massive, that's not the right word. Whatever the word is, that massive times a billion is, that's the word. Disconnect between valuations and price right now in terms of some of these names, there's still a lot of reason for us to believe that clean energy and the whole entire sector will be a hot ticket for the foreseeable future, especially if we have these initiatives that want to get through by the Biden administration. We're not only talking about Tesla here, which of course shot up last week to 1,000 times, you know, a PE, a multiple of 1,000 or so, and I think 180 times sales or some ridiculous number times sales. I don't think 180 is right. Maybe it's 18. Hold that thought. But I know it's about 1,000 PE multiple. And their inclusion in the S&P 500 is obviously a different situation. But yeah, Tesla's been an unbelievable performer. And we have several other companies that are looking, you know, just as pretty this year, kind of under the radar. And a lot of them are in this clean energy area. So again, whether it's the solar, whether it's electric charging stations, whether it is, you know, other companies that are creating, whether it's scooters, cars, golf carts, trucks, you know, any kind of electric boat engines, something to really look into. I'm not going to give you all the specific names here, but clearly look into solar, some of the picks that are, some of the areas that are picked, like, you know, back in the gold rush, there was a picks and shovels concept, right? What do you want to buy? Well, I want to be the owner of Levi Jeans because they're going to sell no matter what, whether somebody finds the gold or not. I want to be owner of a company that provides the picks and shovels. So picks and shovels kind of are the companies that provide the materials or services for the sector. So those I really kind of think are really interesting. And we have some of these names actually in the TDI Managed Growth Strategy. And I got to tell you, last week in particular was remarkable. Huge gains on these names. Like eye-popping, like, wow. And I really don't necessarily think this is the end of this cycle. Well, I think you may have some better entry points in some of these, but I got to tell you something. Playing these things right and being involved right now, I think, is a major opportunity. There'll be some major disasters, too. I always like to try to temper everything, right? But I think there's some major opportunities here. So as renewable energy areas is something I really want you to start paying attention to. You're going to have some problems with valuations and really fundamentals right now. But from a technical standpoint, when you see some of these things breaking out, I mean, when they break out, it's not like, okay, you know, up 10%. These things have been moving like 40 and 50% in a matter of a week. One of our names last week was up, I just want to say it was well over 100%. So just something to consider. Let's finish up this discussion today with something. Something's been on my mind. I got an email from a friend of mine, and he works, he's a doctor, and he works with his financial advisor who's at a big wirehouse. One of these brokers that is at one of these big name companies where everybody is the vice president. You know what I'm talking about here, right? Yeah. Everybody's a VP. He asked me to look at a recommendation that they sent him. You know, he's like, hey, what do you think of this? I'm like, all right, let me take a look. So the first thing we have to understand is that it looked to me that they just came up with something that kind of met what he was talking about, that he was concerned about risk and the market's heights and what was going on and what could he put into his IRA. And they like came up with something and just pitched it to him. And maybe he did, in fact, state, you know, I'm interested in a lower risk profile, whatever it is. But they just sent him this thing and this analysis and the statistical analysis and sales material and spec sheets on this investment idea. Nothing about fees, liquidity, how it fits into his portfolio that he already has. Oh, my gosh. God forbid we do a little bit of planning here. And it gets worse. Because what they sent him was a proprietary product from a group within the firm, which is not objective. It's not portfolio management, but rather a sale that they were pitching. A product sale. This really gets under my skin. Because I was hoping that one day this wouldn't be the case anymore. But this is still how it's done, isn't it? No matter how much time passes, the old sales pitch is alive and well. Yeehaw! You gotta be careful of this. Because I start wondering, no, who's this good for? Aside from the broker. Because there's probably some, I would assume, there's got to be an incentive involved in them pushing the product that was with their firm and a group within their firm that probably should be disclosed. And while this, listen, it is possible that this could end up being a good investment, right? That is a very good and possible outcome of all this. But the probability is, well, who knows? Because while they gave an analysis and a statistical summary and a past performance on this particular investment, they didn't put it up against, like, let's say peers to see if it's best suited for the position for the client. See, it doesn't matter necessarily about it matters about the return, but it doesn't matter necessarily about the return. It matters if it's a good fit for the client and their portfolio. Because if it was all about just getting the most return over time, regardless of the downside risk and all that, everybody would invest it in, I don't know, pick your crazy investment that it would be. But sometimes a little bit more than that. Sometimes people are like, you know, hey, I want to make money with my money, but I really don't want to have downside, or I don't really want to have risk at all, or I want to have risk, but I want to have it commensurate with my time frame so that, you know, it all aligns. But that's not what happened here. It was just an investment pitched. Now, I can imagine that the rest of the portfolio is a pile of pitched investments that, I don't know, don't add up to anything. So let me give you a bit of advice here. And this is not the way to build a portfolio. When you have sloppy one-off investments that kind of look good, again, you end up 10 years later with a pile of all these investments that you have no idea how they fit together, how they're working in tandem or they're working in correlation with each other, how it may risk be adding or subtracting risk from the portfolio, and definitely not tailored to your specific risk and time horizon. You have a freaking mess is all you have. That's all it is. It's a giant pile of crap. I got to tell you, honestly, I thought this whole sales practice style was gone. Especially the proprietary deals. And especially those proprietary deals to investors who have no idea what they're actually investing in. Salespeople, you know, this vice president getting a commission for the deal and probably some other, but it's just so aggravating. Just makes me so angry. And you know why? Because I see these portfolios down the road sometimes. And I have to make some sense out of what's going on for clients. And they have no idea what they have. And oftentimes, a lot of these things are really sticky where you can't get out of them too easily. And more importantly, they have ridiculously high fees and they underperform for what they're supposed to be. Now, again, if you have a real estate investment that underperforms, what does that mean? Well, is it severely underperforming other real estate investments that are similar? Well, that's a problem. Is it just underperforming, let's say, the S&P, but yet it is in line with the real estate investments that is benchmarked to what this does? Well, that's okay. That's all right. That's a decision if that's something you want to be in. But overall, it's a terrible disservice to you. And that's what really gets me. The real problem is it's so often that we see this later in the game when the realization is that, you know what? I got to retire soon. Let's see what my portfolio is all about. And when, by the time we get it, you see that you have all these sales jobs and it's almost too late to make it actually resemble a decent portfolio. So many years have gone on. So let's be smart, shall we? Let's be smart. Let's be disciplined. Let's continue with our process and not get this bamboozled by slick sales jobs. This is your family's future. It's your future. And if you don't understand something, tell the person, I don't understand. How does this work and where does this fit in my portfolio? You know, if you have some of these investments mixed in your portfolio already, I challenge you to take a look at these. And if you don't have any idea at all what it is that you're looking at, listen, you can send it over to me and I'll look at it. You also need somebody to guide you. Go find yourself someone who you trust, an advisor that you feel can work with you on a portfolio basis rather than on a sales pitch basis and providing you this bamboozled process of just filling you up like an overstuffed Tom turkey on Thanksgiving with junk. Find somebody that you can trust, that you can work without conflict. And that is your job for the end of the year. We have, number one, we have the investology through the end of the year. If anybody wants to sign up for that, I told you about that, how that works, and become a client. We'd love you to have be part of the process. I'd love you to become a client. Number two, we have taxes, right? That's the end of the year assignments, taxes. Start looking at where you are from a tax loss, tax gain, and what's going to be passing through. And number three, look at your portfolio and see if you have any junk in there. See if you've been sold. And then figure a way to clean it up. as we get into the end of the year. You know, it's Thanksgiving this week coming up. Happy Thanksgiving. Now is as good a time as any to take a moment and do some of this work, this portfolio pruning and process and disciplined investing impact, if you will, on your portfolio. So hopefully this got you to push you off your seat a little bit, got you the idea that, you know, maybe I should do something. I should look at something and give you that extra oomph, that extra added push to really take a hard look at your portfolio by the end of this year. With that, we're going to call it to a close. Another episode of the Disciplined Investor podcast comes to an end. Thank you for joining me. I will definitely see you next week. Have a great tea day at Thanksgiving. Love to your family. Be safe. Be well. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training.